Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Capital Order: How Economists Invented Austerity and Paved the Way to Fascism, is a work of political economy and economic history by Clara E. Mattei. Published by the University of Chicago Press, it examines the emergence of modern austerity in the aftermath of World War I, focusing especially on Britain and Italy during the interwar years. Mattei challenges the conventional view that austerity is mainly a neutral response to fiscal crisis or public debt. Instead, she argues that austerity developed as a political strategy to defend capitalism at a moment when labor movements, democratic experiments, and demands for economic self-government threatened existing relations of power. The book combines intellectual history, archival research, and institutional analysis to show how economists, central bankers, and policymakers helped present wage cuts, public spending restraint, and monetary discipline as technical necessities. Its purpose is not only historical but interpretive. It asks readers to reconsider austerity as a mechanism for restoring hierarchy rather than merely balancing budgets. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, austerity as a strategy for restoring capitalist authority after World War I. Mattei places the birth of modern austerity in the political and social disruption that followed World War I. The war had expanded state planning, public coordination of production, and worker expectations about participation in economic life. In Britain and Italy, labor militancy, factory councils, strikes, and socialist politics raised the possibility that economic decisions might no longer remain under the exclusive control of owners, financiers, and traditional state elites. The book argues that austerity was designed to reverse this opening. Its policies were not only fiscal measures but instruments for reimposing discipline on labor and restoring the authority of capital over production. Wage restraint, reductions in public expenditure, balanced budget ideology, and monetary stabilization all help shift power away from workers and toward employers and creditors. This framing is central to the book because it changes the meaning of austerity. Rather than treating it as painful but necessary economic repair, Mattei presents it as a political response to a crisis of capitalist legitimacy. Austerity becomes intelligible as a method of narrowing democratic alternatives when workers had begun to imagine broader forms of economic control. Secondly, the threefold mechanism of fiscal, monetary, and industrial austerity. A distinctive feature of the capital order is its treatment of austerity as a coordinated system rather than a single budgetary policy. Mattei identifies austerity through interlocking fiscal, monetary, and industrial mechanisms. Fiscal austerity reduced public spending and social provision, limiting the redistributive role of the state. Monetary austerity prioritized stable currency, balanced accounts, and policies favorable to creditors, often at the expense of employment and wages. Industrial austerity focused on labor discipline, wage compression, and the weakening of collective bargaining power. Together, these mechanisms transferred the costs of crisis onto workers while preserving the claims of capital. This framework matters because it explains why austerity can persist even when it fails to produce broad prosperity. Its success, in Mattei's account, is measured less by social welfare than by the restoration of conditions favorable to accumulation and managerial control. By connecting budget policy to money, credit, and workplace power, the book avoids a narrow debate about government spending. It shows austerity as a broader political technology that reshapes the state, the labor market, and the boundaries of democratic decision-making. Thirdly, economists and technocrats as political actors behind supposedly neutral policy, Mattei gives close attention to the role of economists, central bankers, and international financial experts in translating political goals into the language of necessity. The book argues that austerity gained authority because it was presented as technical expertise rather than open class politics. Conferences, financial institutions, and advisory networks helped define balanced budgets, sound money, and labor restraint as responsible governance. This made deeply contested choices appear objective and unavoidable. The importance of this argument lies in its challenge to the idea that economic expertise stands outside political conflict. Mattei does not claim that every economist had identical motives, but she shows how liberal and conservative economic thinkers often converged around policies that protected capital from democratic pressure. Technocratic insulation also mattered institutionally. Central banks and financial authorities could pressure elected governments toward creditor-friendly policies while distancing those choices from popular debate. The result was a form of governance in which economic democracy was restricted not by rejecting politics outright, but by relocating crucial decisions into expert domains. The book, therefore, treats economics as a discipline with real institutional power, not merely as a set of abstract theories. Fourthly, the comparison of liberal Britain and fascist Italy, The book's comparative focus on Britain and Italy allows Mattei to examine austerity across different political regimes. Britain remained a liberal parliamentary state, while Italy moved into fascism under Benito Mussolini. Mattei argues that despite these differences, both countries used austerity to discipline labor and preserve capitalist relations after wartime disruption. This comparison is important because it prevents austerity from being understood as exclusively fascist or exclusively liberal. Instead, the book shows a shared commitment among influential policymakers and economic elites to restoring the capital order. In Italy, fascism provided a more openly authoritarian framework for suppressing labor and enforcing economic discipline. In Britain, similar priorities could operate through parliamentary government, central banking, financial orthodoxy, and elite consensus. The contrast highlights both continuity and difference. Fascism intensified coercion, but it did not invent the basic economic logic of disciplining workers in the name of stability. Liberal institutions, in Mattei's account, were also capable of narrowing democratic economic demands when those demands threatened property relations. This is one of the book's most provocative contributions. It examines the overlap between liberal economic orthodoxy and authoritarian outcomes without collapsing all political forms into the same category. Lastly, the link between austerity, anti-democracy, and the rise of authoritarian solutions. The Capital Order connects austerity to fascism by emphasizing how economic discipline can weaken democratic possibilities. Mattei's argument is not simply that austerity mechanically causes fascism in every context. Rather, she shows that austerity can create or reinforce political conditions in which authoritarian solutions become acceptable to elites when democratic movements challenge capitalist control. In interwar Italy, policies that restored profitability and weakened labor were welcomed by many economic interests, even as fascism destroyed political freedoms. The book also notes that British observers and institutions often viewed Italian stabilization favorably because it delivered order and protected investment. This reveals a key implication: the defense of economic hierarchy can lead powerful actors to tolerate or support coercive politics when social unrest is perceived as a greater threat. The broader lesson is that austerity is not only an economic doctrine, but a political project with consequences for citizenship, collective power, and democratic accountability. By tracing these consequences historically, Mattei invites readers to examine contemporary austerity with greater suspicion, especially when crisis management is used to justify insulating economic decisions from public contestation. In conclusion, The Capital Order is best suited to readers interested in political economy, economic history, European interwar history, the history of economic thought, and the relationship between capitalism and authoritarianism. It will be especially valuable for students, scholars, policy analysts, and general readers who want to understand austerity beyond the usual debate over deficits and debt. Its practical benefit is conceptual clarity. It gives readers a framework for recognizing how fiscal restraint, monetary orthodoxy, and labor discipline can work together as a political program. Its intellectual benefit is historical depth. By returning to Britain and Italy after World War I, Mattei shows how ideas that appear technical were shaped by struggles over class power and democracy. The book stands out from many accounts of austerity because it does not focus mainly on recent neoliberal reforms or the post-2008 crisis. Instead, it reconstructs an earlier genealogy, linking the rise of modern economics, technocratic authority, and the restoration of capitalist hierarchy in a period of mass social mobilization. Readers should approach it as a forceful and critical interpretation, not as a neutral survey of all possible explanations for fascism. Its distinctiveness lies in showing austerity as an institutional and ideological weapon, not merely as an economic error or policy preference. If you would like to support Clara E. Mattei, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.